as I say, one of the early day doctors, they had their own method of putting some medicines together, and he had an account with the Spokane Drug Company in Spokane. And when we were up at Melrose, I can remember the drugs were delivered by the stage line. Never had too much to come, so it'd be just in small boxes. I do remember, though, that he had a very small showcase, and that was always moved wherever we went. And in that showcase would be different things that people would like. But I know the top shelf always had chocolate candy. And he would always have some chocolate candy to sell. And I have an idea that the young children got free samples. The one thing about it, my father always had a team of horses, and it wouldn't make any difference what time of day, night, or how much anyone owed him. If they called him to come, if someone was sick, he would bundle up, regardless of the weather, and take off. And I can remember seeing him several times when he was dressed in real heavy clothing. He had a very special fur cap that he pulled down over his head, and you could just barely see his eyes in it. But that was one thing about it. My dad went when he was called. Now, when we moved to Potlatch in 1907, I went to Potlatch in 1907. My folks went in 1906. I stayed with my stepmother's folks in Moscow. And Potlatch Lumber Company was started in September 22nd in 1905. They burnt down a small shack, a log cabin, squatter shack they were called. And I believe that is where the power plant for the Potlatch Mill is sitting today, on the spot where this log cabin is located. In 1906, they started the mill and started in operation. And the first manager was a fellow by the name of William Deary. And he was appointed by the Weyerhaeuser Company, and the mill at the time it was built in Ladaw County, about 9 miles from Pluse, Washington, on the Potlatch River. The Weyerhaeuser Company had heard about the big pine stand of timber that was in Ladaw County, and they bought all that they could get a hold of. And they came to Ladaw County, and there was a real nice meadow where they built the mill. Potlatch is a name, it's from the Indian name, and it means a great feast or a general distribution of good things. Therefore, they thought that the Potlatch would be the logical name for the new mill. Now, the Washington, Idaho, and Montana Railroad, which might be called the Stump Dodger or the Washington Ironing and Mending Railroad, was built between Pluse, Washington, and Beauville, Idaho. And although it's a separate organization from the Potlatch Company, it played a very important part in the development of the mill, because it gave the outlet at both recluse to the Great Northern, Northern Pacific, and the Inland Electric train that was running at that time. And then there was a line built in from St. Mary's to Elk River that made connections at Bowville. And it was a very good outlet for all of the lumber. The first two locomotives that run the passenger trains were number one and two, and they had three coaches, as I remember, when they first started, that ran to Pluse, and then from Pluse to Bowville, and then back to Pluse, and then back to Potlatch. That was a day's work. And they sometimes had what they called a mixed train. They didn't have enough to run a freight train. The engines number one and two, since it was downgrade, they were capable of moving a pretty good size mixed train, which would be boxcars loaded with lumber, or it might be flat cars loaded with lumber. But most of the time, the good lumber was shipped in boxcars. Now, the big deal to get the logs to the mill from Bowville was to bring the logs down about a 40-mile trip with engines number 21 and 22. And they were very large steam locomotives, quite a bit larger than the ones that carried the passengers. These engines have all been discarded. I really can't tell you where they are, excepting for number one. It has been moved around behind the depot in Potlatch and sits on a separate track, and you can see it anytime that you go to Potlatch. It's kind of a curiosity to see the old steam engine. Now getting back to the town of Potlatch, it was a home town. You might call it was a one-man town. All of the real estate, houses, stores, hotels, the school buildings, and churches were owned by the Potlatch Lumber Company. There was about 300 houses of different designs, and they were rented to the people that were working in the mill at a very nominal rate of rent, and it was quite a thriving town. I believe about 1970 or 1930, it would be in the neighborhood of between 1,500 and 2,000 population. But I believe today 800 to 1,000 would cover it. I mentioned the churches. There was a Union Church which had quite a large following. And I remember the first pastor was a Reverend Skates. And it wasn't too large a church. It sat across the street from the grade school, and it was used just a very few years when they built a very fine church, and it's called the Union Church, and it burnt down, and they didn't have a church for a while, but now they have rebuilt, and it's a very nice church that was all built with volunteer labor. The Catholic Church was built and was used all through the years, and I believe it's still in use. And the Lutheran Church was just a small building, never had very much of a following, but a Reverend Anderson had came to Potlatch with the pastor of the Lutheran Church, was the pastor of the Union Church, pardon me. And the last few years, I believe the pastor of the Lutheran Church is holding services both at his Lutheran Church and also in the Union Church. I don't know too much about the Catholic Church. I remember Father Pete Cole was one of the first Catholic priests in Potlatch. Now, the sawmill itself, at the time it was built, was considered one of the largest in the United States. But that didn't hold good but for a short time, because I understand they built another church in the state of Georgia that was larger, but not very much. The first engine in the Potlatch Mill, it was all operated with belts and pulleys, and the first engine was 1,200 horsepower and 12 boilers provided the steam for that. The first floor of the sawmill was all belts and pulleys. The second floor was where they cut all the lumber, and the third floor where they brought the bandsaws up to sharpen them, and there was also a catwalk for visitors to go through and stand up there and watch the operation in the mill. And there was always someone up there. They liked to have the timber come through and see what was going on. The planing mill was a separate machine and bandsaws for the regular mill, and it was run with the same kind of an engine, twin city cordless engine, but it was only 700 horsepower, quite a bit smaller. In the last few years, these engines were all gone, been dismantled, and everything is run with electric motors. And to go through it now and see the difference, in the early days it was all belts and pulleys, and there'd be miles of them. Today that is all eliminated.
What's the difference in the amount of manpower used in the mill?
Well, electric motors have cut down on the manpower an awful lot. And just the mill alone, when I worked in it in 1921, I think it was something like 40 men that took care of the lumber in just the main floor of the sawmill. Today I believe that is cut down but to 12. Everything is a push button deal. And you see the fellow sitting up there pushing buttons where the men used to do the work. And he's sitting up high enough that he can see everything that's going on. Now, we've mentioned the fact that my father was an early doctor in Idaho. The Potlatch Lumber Company had their own doctors, and they were called the company doctors. One of them was a Dr. E.T. Hine that had a small hospital in Pluse, Washington. And he came up to Potlatch at least twice a week, and he had a small office in a building. But the resident doctor was a Dr. Thompson, a very good doctor. He was in Potlatch for many years, and then when Dr. Hine quit, there was a doctor by the name of Gibson that came from St. Mary's, Idaho, and he's a very good surgeon. He was in St. Mary's when the Milwaukee Railroad built through, and then he later moved to Bowville, but about 1918, he moved to Potlatch, Idaho. And they The first buildings that they built in Potlatch, they provided two of them for the single men, and they were called the boarding houses, one and two. And in about 1918, they closed up number one boarding house and converted it into a hospital. And Dr. Gibson was the first doctor to take over in the new hospital in Potlatch. And he was there until 1946, when he retired and moved to the coast. And Dr. Thompson retired, moved to Moscow, and for a while they didn't have a doctor there. But at the present time there is a Dr. Biggerstaff in Potlatch, and he has been there for about 11 years. Now in 1934, we moved to Coeur d'Alene. I haven't said where my wife and I met, but we met when I was working in the store in Potlatch, Idaho. Marie Olson was a Coeur d'Alene girl, and she came down there as a stenographer, and I met her, and then the only way she could get rid of me was to marry me. We have two boys. One of them sells audiovisual in Spokane. To tell you more about what it is, something in the Bell and Howell line. He comes into Coeur d'Alene about every other week, and whenever he does, he makes it a point to stop at the junior college to see if they need any of his equipment. Our other boy is a graduate of the University of Idaho, and he is a civil engineer, and you'll find him in Lepard and Frame, consulting engineers on 4th Street in Coeur d'Alene. George, the oldest boy, graduated from Whitworth College in business.
Your house is on the side of Fort Sherman.
Oh yes, I should dwell on that a little bit. The lot that we live on was bought by my father-in-law about 1905. He and his brother bought adjoining lots here at 209 Forest Drive and 211 Forest Drive. 209 Forest Drive. Well, that's where we live, and 213 is where the brother lives. And the lot that we are on was originally the band quarters for the band personnel for Fort Sherman, but it burned up, and it was just the empty lot here for a long time. In our alley, there's a railroad track between us and the junior college, and otherwise our property would, and the street would be adjoining the campus for the junior college. And in the early days, there was a shingle mill just to the south of our property on the lake, and it burned up about 1898. But I understand that they also sawed lumber, and they sawed the lumber for the first boat that was built to put on the lake, and it was called the Amelia Wheaton, and it was named after the youngest daughter of the fort commander. But I don't want to say too much about Coeur d'Alene because I didn't come here until 1934, and I think that there are other people who are capable of giving a much better outline of it than I can. What we call the Little Red Church at the end of the block was the first church for the port personnel, and I believe it was, for a short time, it was also used as a school for the Port Sherman people. And then there was a nice school built not too far from the port, probably about three blocks. It had recently been torn down, but that was called the Port Sherman School. And the Port Sherman School that's here now is a very fine building, and it was so close to our home that we could watch our boys go to school from our back door. Now there's the one thing about it here, there's a human interest story that comes into this that is really quite different. When I was in Potlatch, I went to school with a family, and their name was Harris, and they came to Potlatch in 1908 from Chicago, Oregon. And there was the mother and father, and three girls and three boys. And they were in school with me from, I would say, about the sixth grade through high school. But one of them, Everett Harris, dropped out of school and was helping his father on a farm, and he suddenly disappeared. And they thought that he'd gone up on a small mountain and fell in a mine shaft. Nevertheless, they couldn't find him. They even shut down the mill a day to look for him. So everyone had given him up for dead until around 1964. They found out that he was alive. And I think the way they found it out was the fact that he went to Princeton, Idaho.
You were talking about the Harris
family. Well, about 1964, Everett Harris went to Princeton, Idaho, a little town from Potlatch, about 3 miles from Potlatch, and he inquired as to what had happened to the family, and he was informed that they were buried in Chicago, Oregon. So he went down there, and the sexton of the graveyard gave him the name of Ray Harris in Spokane. And he contacted Ray Harris, and sure enough, the last few years, the remaining members of the family, the two boys and two girls that were left, made it a point to meet with him at least twice a year. Now, the reason he wanted to make contact with the family was a friend of his had passed away in California, and she didn't have any heirs, and the state of California got the estate. And in the meantime, Everett had married, and his wife died in 1934, and he had remained in Bakersfield, California, where he was manager of the Bakersfield Inn. And he had accumulated a substantial estate, and he thought it would be the only thing to contact his brothers and sisters and leave his estate to them, because he knew that he was dying of terminal cancer, and he wanted to be sure that his family would come in to the estate. After he passed away, they had a memorial service in Spokane, and all of the friends that they knew or whereabouts were notified, and we went into Spokane for the memorial service. And it was a very touching thing. There was a lot of the people there that he'd gone to school with, and a cousin that was a pastor in a church in California grew up and gave the memorial address. And I was very fortunate to be included. Now, this last year, my wife and I went to Baltimore, Maryland to visit some friends, and we went to Washington, D.C., Gettysburg Battlefield, Harper's Ferry, and the night before we came home, we went into a restaurant where they served a specialty of a fish food dish. And our friend said, you ought to order that too. You like fish, and I think you'd have something that you really like. And I did. I had fish food that I'd never heard of. And then when I started to pay for our meal, I said, I don't see a cash register around here any place. Who do you pay? And the fellow said, well, I've paid here before, and you pay the waitress. I said, okay. So I got up, walked around the table, and I walked up to the waitress, and I said, you know, I was born and raised in the backwoods of northern Idaho. I never ate out very much, and I just didn't know the proper procedure here, but I understand I'm to pay you. And the little lady looked up at me and gave me a nice smile, and she says, you know, a couple of years ago, my husband and I drove out to Seattle to visit my sister, and we stopped at the prettiest little town in northern Idaho, and it was called Coeur d'Alene. And, you know, it's a small world. And I think with that, I had better quit.
Have we discussed schools at all in potlatch?
Well, it seems to me that I mentioned the fact that I went to school through the first grade through high school there. But I didn't dwell on it very much. But I might tell you this, that the officials of the warehouse company provided us with a tar paper check for our first school that stood to the left of where the warehouses down by the railroad track are now. And we only went there 1 year, and they built a real nice school building that was used until just recent years. The school was built up on 6th Street, and if I remember correctly, there wasn't any furniture in the building, and they marched us up and took a picture of the youngsters that were in school in 1907, and in 1908 we went into the new school building. And that was the grade school, first through 8th, for many years, and the high school was just a converted Lutheran church that was across the street. The first four graduates of the Potlatch High School graduated from the basement room in the grade school building. And then when they built the new Lutheran church, they remodeled the first Lutheran church for a high school building. And that's where I went for 4 years. And I graduated there in 1921. This building was used for the high school for several years. Now they have a new high school to the left of the highway as you come into Potlatch from the Y. And the building that they used for high school for quite a while has been converted to grade school. And the original grade school building has been remodeled and rebuilt, and I haven't been in it, but it's a very fine apartment house.
Oh. Did you mention anything about recreation in Potlatch?
Well, in the early days, there was There wasn't any recreation in Potlatch. We had good baseball teams. Everybody played baseball and went to school. We had a very fine gymnasium, and we had quite a lot of activity there. Dances and basketball and indoor baseball, which is what we call softball, outdoor softball now. We had indoor baseball. And that was about all. There wasn't too much recreation.
Were there any plays or anything?
Yes, we had school plays. And it was my very good fortune to be included in quite a lot of them. From the time that I was in the seventh grade through high school. I don't remember too much about them, but I do remember being in a play that was called Foxy's Basketball that was really a very good comedy. And then the next one that I remember was The Merchant of Venice Up to Date. And I can remember that because there was a couple of things that very unusual happened. They, Merchant of Venice Up to Date, we had the characters and Portia was looking out of a window up in the stage. I was supposed to whistle and holler, and when I did, the guy that was going to elope with her hit me across the nose and made my nose bleed. Well, I had on this clown outfit that they rented from an outfit in Spokane, and I went over to the edge of the stage and I kept whispering to the prompter and the man that was running the curtain, and I kept asking him for a handkerchief. I wasn't talking very loud, but I needed a handkerchief awfully bad, and I wasn't getting it. So finally, right in the middle of the whole play, I just hollered out, "Give me a handkerchief," and that brought down the house. But I got a handkerchief anyway. And some few days after the play was on, they returned the clown outfit to the people in Spokane, and they got a bill for $15. And whoever had the clown outfit on ruined it because they got it all covered with blood. And they questioned me about it, and I said, "Yeah, don't you remember? I asked you for a handkerchief." And that turned out rather funny as well as bad. And I do remember one thing in the play, and I'm not too much about it, but they wanted to know if they were going to elope. And I said, "No, they're feeding their muskmelon, so she can't elope."
Oh.
That's all I remember about it.
Oh. Did they have, celebrations or anything like that?
Oh, yes. They always had a 4th of July celebration, and then they had what they called Potlatch Days. And Potlatch Days was a very similar thing that they'd have on the 4th of July. They would have quite a parade. A high school band, maybe the Proof Band would join them. And there would be old-time machinery, logging equipment, and then they bring it up to date with the new logging equipment. They don't use the WINM railroad flat cars to bring logs from Beauville anymore. The flat cars have all disappeared, and they bring them in with trucks. So they would show some of the old hard-wheel trucks that brought the logs the first time, and then they'd show the late modern trucks that they're bringing from Beauville now. The reason for stopping to bring them in on trains, they can get into the back country with trucks so much easier than they can a logging train. And it's quite a museum piece now to see the old logging trucks that the oxen would pull around. And I have some very fine pictures of those, as well as the old donkey engine that would sit on a skid out in the woods and bring the logs in with cable. And that's gone now. They just can go right into where the logs are with the trucks.
Mm-hmm. I understand you have an interesting hobby.
Well, I do have a hobby. It's a little bit different than the regular run-of-the-mill, if you want to call juggling and magic. I played a little baseball when I was in high school, and I started doing a little juggling, and then I would quit it, get tired of it, and then I came to Coeur d'Alene in 1934. I seen right away that there was a place for some entertainment, so I joined up with a fellow by the name of George Corr, that was a barber, and he was also a good magician. And George and I went around the country and put on a few shows and helped with different programs. And then he left and went to Carson, Washington. So I put in one winter with a fellow by the name of Lee Hoagland in Spokane, and we entertained a few high schools. And then I took a couple of tricks from George Corr and a few from Lee Hoagland and put together my own show, Magic and Juggling. And I'm 74 years old, and I'll help with the program the first Friday in March, this coming March.
Pretty good. I think we've pretty well covered Potlatch. Is there anything else about the town you might want to add?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, thank you very much. This tape will be placed in the North Idaho College Library for future reference.
Okay.